take an intro.
Hey, how you doing, honey? How you doing today?
Good, good.
How was the kids? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. I like the blue balls.
Blue Balls Pod.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Blue Balls. Season 10.
The blue ball. The blue ball.
Season 10. 10.
Yeah, sounds good. Like the moon on a certain soda pop flavored beer, ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. My name is Jake Beckard, and I am your intrepid co-host, and I am joined this week, as every week, by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, what do you think about Blue Moon? Where would you place it on your pantheon of beers that are available in most places?
I like Blue Moon. I used to drink it a lot more. And now I don't. I don't know why. I think back when, like, I could drink more beers, it was like candy. Because it is.
Yes.
It's good.
It is remarkably
get
like
that little
candy.
Orange slice. It's almost like you're at a soccer game.
My dad, who's not a bully, has never made more fun of me than when I bought a six-pack of Blue Moon.
I couldn't see your dad doing that.
Like, he took it out of the bag and he went, "What are we doing here?"
Yep, I could see it in his voice.
What is this?
Do you think that beers are like when? Do you think that it's like when, like how flavored vapes are fundamentally marketed to fifth graders? When a beer has a twist off cap,
I think that's unrelated. And also, I take that first part personally
because you're a fifth grader. It's not all vapes, I guess.
Apparently.
Do you vape with flavors?
The marketing works so well. Huh?
You don't do flavored vapes. You don't vape at all. But you don't flavor vape.
I was a big flavor vapor. I was in the mango crew back when, who's that mayor? Who's the mayor, the bandit? De Blasio.
And now it's back. What's the legal? What's the deal with that? How does
it's not back? Jewels is still banned. Except
I know
for
all the legit
tobacco.
Ones, but every smoke shop has flavored vapes.
Of course,
I mean, you see,
they're disposable. I guess is why it's
that
legal.
Can't
I have
be
no
it.
Idea.
Can it? That's nuts.
I don't
they
know.
Can't be legal.
I don't ask.
It's just one of those unregulated things, like all of the weed shops. None of the weed shops are legal. It's just that everyone's agreed to turn a blind eye, and they're so everywhere that like mate you know that regulating them it's a mess Williamsburg has become such a mess.
Hey, back off.
No, you're right. It's yeah, it happened specifically when a friend of mine moved there.
I ruined this place.
Trey, I feel as if no amount of flavored vapes could relieve my feelings, could lift my spirits from the popcorn lung riddled experience of watching this 0-2 loss against St. Louis, the second match of the season. NYCFC with just one away win, just one road win. Not in 2024, but since the beginning of 2023. It's feeling grim out here, folks. And I wonder if that is just that all of the stats that we were shared on over the course of that broadcast and that we saw play out on the field just felt so accumulatively awful that it eclipsed what was, I think, probably a mediocre but not cataclysmic performance. Is that fair to say, Trey? That like a lot of the grousing is not really about this match, but about the whole long tail of where we're at?
I think that's extremely fair because, like, the main this game was almost, you know, much like any soccer game, but similar to the Charlotte game, super segmented kind of in how it went and how it ebbed and flowed. I would say, you know, I was reminded kind of 3-4 minutes in, you're watching this match and you're like, oh yeah, this is what it's like. This is exactly what to expect against a very talented, super high pressing team. Like, it's not going to be pretty. You're not going to build a lot of things. It's going to take a long time to settle in. You're going to have to wait for them to tire out a bit. So I get that. And I was just, you know, waiting to see if we would be able to take advantage of it. And even so, even after St. Louis scored their first goal, it was like, it's still there. Much like the Charlotte game after the first half, you could have been like, there's still something there. We might be able to get something out of this. It's not, it, as you said, hasn't been cataclysmic. And that was, I don't want to say encouraging, because I think that there were clear markers of distress and negativity and incongruity and so on when you're watching the game from tip to tail. But also, at least there was, you know, some manageable takeaways. Some players look good. There was, we were surviving their pressures and things like that. But at the end of the day, I think you're right. It's in totality, it's this idea of the team never closing out a game, never truly seeming like there's any sort of confidence, and a team that absolutely can't get anything going on the road, and a team that was just not up to the task yet again. And it's okay. Like, look, you're up 2-0. You lost 2-0 to with one like fucking crazy goal to one of the best teams in the West away. So okay, but at the same time, it's more of the overall wash that really leaves a stink in the mouth.
A stink in the mouth.
We yeah. You ever like smell something real bad? You taste it.
Yeah, yeah, I do. I smell my own poop and then I taste it.
Ew, shut the fuck up. But that's what
I can't help myself. It's just who I am.
Well, I wish this team kind of smelled their own shit a little bit. Or what's that phrase about, like, they
stop
think their
shit
doesn't
don't stink.
Yeah, I want them to
lean a little bit closer. Roses really smell like poo poo poo.
Yeah. But this is poo poo smelling like poo poo, man.
Yeah, no one's under the impression that it's roses. Not that you'd know from the way that they talk about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not that you'd know. Like, everybody's still on media training time right now. Everybody's still, like, you know, the long leash and all that is happening. But that's, we'll get into the sort of reactions, the quotes, the press, whatever, afterwards. Let's talk about what actually happened on the field. I want to know from you if you felt like this was a uniformly poor performance, right, from, like, minute one to minute 90, because I think, like, this to me is very interesting. I think stats oriented people or folks who are looking at these graphs in terms of, like, control of the game saw something different than what I saw, which was some decent, if not decent chances, at least more action and more aggression in the first 30 minutes of this match from NYCFC than we saw the previous week, like you were saying.
Yeah, I think they started out the game pretty well. I think that, I mean, it's hard to laud the defensive performance in this match when there was a fair amount of mistakes. Obviously, a lot of those mistakes come from a reaction to St. Louis's press. But when you talk about pure open play defending, I think for the most part, the team did a good job. I was impressed by Burke Risa in a lot of moments. And I think we limited them to not having a high amount of quality chances, less than one expected goal. So, all in all, I think it was a solid defensive performance. And that, when you're against a high-pressing team, that means you're going to look a little better in possession. Let's remain on the positives. I think that my biggest concern was their right side going against our left side. We saw how smart Charlotte was and kind of double-teaming Kevin O'Toole and pinning us back on that side and not allowing any cohesion defensively for us to retain any possession on that side. I think that they certainly focused on our left side for the first part of this match, but at the same time, I think that defensively we did well. I was really scared of Totland or whatever his name is. Totland, whatever. I was scared of him and his ability to park up the field and get it to Vasilev, who I think worked really well. But I think that there was we managed the space well defensively in terms of limiting the chances on that side. Kevin O'Toole didn't get overextended too often and made some good effort plays defensively. And I think you throw on Andres Perea, who kind of threw his body into the mixer to disrupt things that were going on for them, it at least limited their ability to get into the box or around the box. They still, I think, looked extremely confident on the ball going into our defense. I think they strung some good passes together. But, you know, it says a lot that their first goal came from it was pretty much an individual effort to get into the box.
That was
clearly poor defending. That was bad open play defending, obviously. That was a moment of weakness for our defense.
And it was a strong, right? Like, a lot of it came from, it was poor defending, but also it was a strong drive. I mean, it was confident moves. It was good. It wasn't something dazzling. It was fairly MLS-y, but it was still, mm-hmm. we didn't see anybody on our team playing like that with the ball at their feet.
No, I can't remember the last time I did.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's important to point out, like, when we talk about positives, it will transition to negative, because I think that the best player on the field for the first 35 minutes of this game, and in terms of limiting chances, was James Sands. I think that it's crazy to say after, but I think the first 30 minutes, 35 minutes, he was really good at bouncing between the back line and the midfield. I think he interrupted pass lanes extremely well. He had a good sense of covering lines. Like, there was a big moment, a big chance in the first half where Risa had to run out again. As I said, like, they really focused on pinning our left backs back and exploiting that space. And when Risa had to cover, James Sands did a fantastic job covering the front post. And, you know, I think he looked really solid. And then in the 34th minute, he had a stupid mistake trying to dribble the ball, which he shouldn't do, and gave up possession, and that led to the first goal. And after that moment, it was a fucking night and day for him. It was Jekyll and Hyde. He continued to make mistakes on the ball, and then it culminated, of course, in his red card at the end of the match. But, you know, I was impressed at the beginning, but now, you know, he lost his head in more ways than, in many ways in this match, many different ways. And I think the red card at the end, even though it technically really didn't kill us because there was only 8 minutes left, but at the same time, it was pretty indicative of how the evening went for him at the end of the day.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. So shall we focus on that? On Sands specifically in this moment? I mean, I think that one of the things that people have found astonishing is like, okay, sure, yes, he's young. I mean, you were the one who even said this, I think, in texts. He's young, but he's been a professional player for 7 years. This is not new territory for him. And it's not something that we associate with James Sands, who, by and large, like, is a cool head. What was your read on what led, in terms of his game, to that red card?
I think it's a combination of his game, but also how this happens against teams like this. I mean, the most obvious is Rebels, you know? When we play Red Bulls, and when we play, obviously now we see when we play St. Louis, and when we play other high-pressing teams, you have to understand the battle is, and you know what? Nick Cushing said it in the pre-match press conference. He's like, you have to win the battle before you win the game. You have to win the 50-50s. You have to make sure that when they're getting ticky-tack fouls on you, which a high-pressing team will do twice as often as any other team, you can't get frustrated. You can't lose your head. You can't scream at the ref the whole match. If he's not calling it, like, then they have a one-up on you, and you have to work around that. And I think that when you pile all of... because I think that's spread out to the whole team. I think the whole team got frustrated. I think body language... We mentioned in the Charlotte game, this team, you know, they lost and they looked neutered, but they did not look undetermined, or they looked more lost than mad or losing concentration. But in this match, it was awful. When, you know, as the game went on and you're playing from a losing position against a high-pressing team that's clipping your ankles every tackle, it just multiplies and multiplies, and then when the desperation sets in and you get fouled hard, you know, a yellow card foul, James Sands was pulled down in a pretty dangerous way. He lost his head because I think he just knew how many, you know, mistakes he had made up until that point and how many times he had been fouled and how frustrating it was that he couldn't deliver balls through the middle of the field because he couldn't. And I think that's what led to that red card. And it was stupid. It was dumb. It was very clear. It was also very weird to see. You know, my wife was looking at Twitter. She's like, why have I seen people saying that James Sands didn't commit a foul? I was like, you're right. Like, that was like, it was extremely clear to even the neutral observer that that was completely unnecessary and immature. And he's better than that. And I hope he knows that, learns from that, and knows that he's better than that. Because we know he is. We don't see it from him often. But, you know, the player he kicked out on had a huge cut on his stomach after the game. I saw some St. Louis fans saying. Because that player gave his jersey away and then just had this huge James Sands-sized boot mark on his stomach.
Did you ever see our friend Matt Palmer's stomach?
Maybe 15 years ago?
He's got a big old scar from one time he got drunk and smashed a bottle and then just cut himself on the stomach. And that's what I'm sort of... It turned, now it's a sort of permanent worm. I'm kind of imagining this similar thing. Matt Palmer of Sheer Mag, which just released a brand new album this week.
No free plugs. No free plugs.
You're right. No free plugs. I'll invoice him. Don't worry. I'm wondering. What am I wondering? I'm wondering about. I think like yeah. Well, obviously a lot. The thing that I was getting distracted thinking about or headed like tilting us toward was also. I think one of the things that really builds up frustration in a match like this, which is to say the rate of dispossession in this team, This is obviously a hallmark of playing against a team that knows how to use a high press. It's sort of astonishing to me how consistently effective the high press has been against NYCFC for its entire decade of life. What is it that you, as a seasoned veteran of soccer analysis, Trey, what is it that you can advise to individuals on this, like on the team, in terms of how they can or should be dealing with things like dispossession better?
You know, I actually think Keaton Park said it best after the game, and he's another one. You know, you just to transition into this point, I was a little disappointed at our cup veterans, James Sands, obviously. Keaton Park's body language, 2023 body language, reared its head again in this match. He was extremely upset a lot of the time. And I think Keaton Park's played a good game as best as he could, but it was just like, yet again, we saw a lack of intention in taking space from everyone. But I was a little upset with how often Keaton was approaching the referee or complaining about calls. And then you have Santi, you know, throwing a fucking piss fit after he got subbed off. Like, these are three players that have been here for a long time and have won with this club. And I think it's a barometer to see those three guys lose their heads in this match. I think Keaton, even after that kind of match, said it well afterwards when he said, like, we need to control the tempo. We need to slow it down. We need to pick our spots. We need to not lose our heads, and we need to, you know, again, it's all goes back to like being more intentional, all these things. And I think that's a fair way, is like not too free. Like, how that 2021 team, how good was it? You're right, where when you say this team is never great against the press, but at the same time, that team in 2021 never panicked, even when they were receiving the ball like double teamed in our own flag corner. We never panicked and made bad passes just to quite the extent that we have been more recently. And I think it's a level of confidence. It's kind of the ability. It's a lot of things. It's slowing the ball down, dictating tempo. It's also having attacking players fucking drop into the midfield, please, for the love of Christ, please do it. I'm tired of no one being between the defense and the offense. It's maddening. And then, you know, all of that goes to the biggest takeaway I have. I'm so there's this fucking thing. I don't know if Nick Cushing started it, but he's certainly one of the biggest offenders, but I've seen many MLS coaches say the same thing. It's this new fucking 2020s coaching initiative, which is we need to make sure we impart our style on the game. You'll hear every fucking coach say this phrase. We need to play our game. We're not going to worry about what they do. As long as we're playing our game, we'll be fine. But then you face a fucking St. Louis, and guess what? You're not going to play your game. They're going to knock you off your game. Not only are they more talented, but they're more disciplined. So what are you going to do? You have to stop playing your game. You have to have a plan B. You know, formationally, we had more bodies in the midfield. We actually didn't have a Santi or a Hannes floating forward so that there was no connect. We had the ability and the people, you know, if our wingbacks got up, we would have upwards of a 5-3, 5-4 man advantage in the midfield, and we should have been able to pass through their press. Or you go over the top, you stretch them more consistently, and not some kind of surprise attack that's a tangent to your game plan, but a more but actually using the long ball and playing direct so that you can set up your gameplay, then you're okay. Then you can stick to your plan and impose your style onto the game. Like, you can't just say we're gonna do this. You have to set it up. You have to, and that goes. It works both ways. And this was the biggest thing. I think people get confused. A lot of complaints about passing backwards with NYCFC. Well, there's no. There's no real, you know, there's no real, and I only checked passing to goalkeepers and how involved a goalkeeper is in a build-up, which I think is at least somewhat indicative of whether or not you're a build-from-the-back kind of team. But teams that involve their goalkeeper in build-up, there's no correlation to expected goal differential. None. So it's not about how much you pass from the back or how much you want to pass backward. It's that NYCFC passes backward without the intention of stretching the defense. Like, you can see them have that muscle memory, and they're like, I feel a press coming. My horizontal outlets are covered, so I'm going to pass back because I know that's what I'm taught to do. But without the intention of saying, of knowing, of having that second level thought of like, I'm going to pass backwards and then I'm going to run into space. I'm going to pass backwards, and if Santi sees I'm passing backwards, he's going to run into space. That second action isn't happening. And it leads to... Go ahead.
You go ahead. And it leads just to that, what?
Without that second action, you get those huge open spaces in the midfield. But also, you know, that's one way to break down a press, is to like pull back their lines and use their pressure against them. The other is to play over the top, play direct, take the top off.
Right.
Even if it's unsuccessful, they have to respect that long ball, and you'll find pockets that way too. You have to do
people
both.
Respect me every time I take my top off. Even if they don't like it, they have to respect it.
Exactly. I was just saying that today, walking to dinner today. I was like, you know, a bunch of people running without their shirts off because it was like in the 60s today in New York. Beautiful day. And it's like, on one hand, it's like, is it really warm enough to be running with your top off? And on the other hand, it's like, no, like, whatever. These people have the confidence I totally wish I did have, and I don't. So more power to them. And I think you're right. You got to fucking...
And they can take a leaf out of this book, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Sure, I 100% buy that. The question that I had, I think, well, first, my first question was, isn't it still annoying to have to watch anti-progressive passing, even if it's with intention? And then my second, more pointed question is, does that kind of like thinking three steps ahead, chess mind action, require a greater degree of soccer intelligence than this team is currently capable of producing? Or is it just that we've got, like, are they, I guess my question is kind of, are the players on the field chronically reactive or just underdeveloped in terms of their soccer intelligence?
I think they're underdeveloped, but it's not entirely dependent on the players and their inherent abilities, because you can teach systems. This is not chess, you know. It's there's only two or three moves you're going to make if you have the fundamentals down. And, you know, this is professional soccer, so for the most part, all these players do. It's more of recognition. It's more of it takes time. This is a young team, and they don't have the recognition of knowing what to do in these situations. And that's why they're missing those opportunities. And it's not just taking the top off. I don't mean just banging it to Bakrar. You know, the most open spaces we had were behind the wingbacks.
Yeah, I saw this graphic.
Their wingbacks. Yeah, tactics, NYCFC tactics, shout out. He was pounding the drum the whole game. Like, why are we not? You know, Hannes Wolf was pretty ineffective in this match. I think he's good when he's on the ball, but in space, he did nothing. But the team around him did nothing to help him because they didn't allow him to get the ball in space. It was always in tight windows or with someone draped all over him. And it speaks to that, like this lack of recognition. But that also goes to the coaching staff, of course, is like you need to. I hope that you see that when you see the tape. And I hope that you work through this with your team. And then the third ingredient outside of players playing more and coaches recognizing is just time. It's just, which I guess is the same as the first part. But it's just working your way into a season with a bunch of new players. Like, that is part of it. Obviously, this team is bad. And we're the worst in the league right now. It's been two games. But it's still true, and this team cannot win on the road to save them their lives, and that we're pretty aware now that the coaching staff, with a large sample size, does not have the players mentally ready for every game they face, and like all of that is true. But at the same time, we have to take into account what I quoted the tweet last podcast, and I'm going to do it again. What Jamin Moore said. Of the Quakes podcast, where he said, like, you got to wait until week three, man. You got to wait. You got to wait until week three and four to get those away teams back home and to have all the narratives flip on their head. You have to give it a month before you can take any real drastic observations. But the negative observations we've made throughout this, you know, are only just carryover from last year.
Right. But that's, I mean, I understand that that tempering, and that probably we'll come home and we'll play against Portland, and I mean, who knows what'll happen. I think we'll look better than we look elsewhere because it's a home match. But I kind of think, I mean, the reason that I kicked off the podcast talking about the record away is because I think that in a way that like I'm less interested in what happens in the home opener. It's actually more distressing to me to continue to have to be scoreless away than it would be to lose a match at home or to lose multiple matches at home, because that shit will even out. Right, we know that. It's not such a tragic team that like we're not going to get points at home. This team does well at home. But if we can do the whether the away matches are the litmus test for whether there's actually been progress on this side. Yeah. It doesn't fucking matter what happened at home. It really doesn't. Yeah. You can't win the league if you can't win away matches.
Yeah.
And we haven't won an away match in what? In a year, practically? Not in a year, but we've won one away match in a year. It's psychotic. It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's coasting on advantage. And there is advantage. It's not sustainable. And
no,
and
it is so damning as to be, I think
it's the main reason why I think people will jump into crisis mode this early in the season.
Yeah. Don't misconstrue me. I'm not trying to fucking paint. I'm not trying to put lipstick on a pig. Like, this is a fucking pig. And we're well aware of that. There are issues structurally and tactically and individual performance wise top to bottom in this team, and that is rough. And if you can't fix that, as you said, on the road, you're not gonna fix it. We got the players, we got talent, we had multiple key people injured in this match or unavailable for this match, and we still had juice on the bench, and it still didn't matter. Because mentally the team isn't there, and tactically, you know, I think the team sets up well, and I think there are good wrinkles to be seen. But if you can't react, or if you're only reacting, I should say, then you're shit out of luck. If you can't react positively, I should say. And they can't. I mean, what else is there to say? Is there anything else in this match that happened that is, like, even worth talking about? It was another fucking shit show. Like, Ojeda, yeah, there was premiered. Good things.
Ojeda debuted.
And, of course, we only once, you know, gave him a ball in behind, you know, his strength and the thing that could save us. Of course, we only did once. And he was also subbed in late, so he didn't get much of an opportunity. I will say, at least my only other takeaway is I think I know the reason. I mean, it became pretty apparent the reason why Julian was maybe invisible against Charlotte and did not start in this match. And that is because he seemed pretty injured. Like, he seemed not 100%. That was my takeaway. I don't know if you saw the same, but it looked like his back might have been tight. He wasn't moving the same way we saw him move. I mean, he's the Sauce King, and it was not saucy. It was very rigid.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair adjudication. It feels like hopefully we'll see things loosen up quite literally in coming matches. I mean, yes, draw a few conclusions if you want, but yeah, I don't know. You're right. There's not that much to talk about. There's even less to talk about this week than there was last week because of the continuations left very little room for it, right? Like, there's just sort of a lot of banging on the television pointing at the same spots on the field.
Yep.
Okay. Should we do some?
I don't know, man. It sucks. What do you want me to say?
Yeah, for sure. Well, how'd you feel about Freeze? How'd you feel about the Iceman?
Would you blame
either of these goals on Matt Freeze?
I think it was a little slow to react to the Adinerin goal, even though it was a fucking piss missile. Like, I don't know how he would have stopped it, but he was in the right position, perfectly placed, but he didn't really do a good job making himself big or reacting in time. But that's okay. Like, maybe we should have scored a goal. It would have helped. And then the first goal, no, it was in traffic. That was tough. I don't think I have anything there. I think the defense did a good job, you know, limiting the Matt Freese's exposure in that match.
Yeah, it feels like as far as if there is a good takeaway, it's primarily that the defense is starting to firm up and that specifically Burke Risa is turning into a player with a high degree of reliability around which you can build a defensive strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least in conjunction with. Okay, the end, whatever. Goodbye, St. Louis. Lots of fun. It's talking points time.
Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points.
That was the Talking Points theme song. Don't you feel like a weight has been lifted not having to talk about that match anymore? My goodness. Finally, we can. I mean, not that we have that much else to cover, but hey, let's get into it. NYCFC 2 will be representing the Baby Blues in the Open Cup this year. We haven't talked about this whole controversy, have we?
No.
When this first dropped, I don't think that it was in the middle of. It wasn't near enough to either of our off-season episodes that we got into it. I think it's an easy. It's so easy to take the position, this is fucked and annoying. You know, it feels fairly obvious to you and me, who are grassroots fans, who believe in the health of a multi-league soccer system in the United States of America. Let's take the devil's advocate. Is there any justifiable defense of MLS side's interest in avoiding open competition in the cup?
No, this is stupid.
None.
I
then why the fuck do it?
Why do what?
Why is it happening? Why is NYCFC sending the babies?
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I've misinterpreted your question. You're saying, is there no incentive to do it? What are you saying? I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying, what is the good faith argument for why NYCFC shouldn't participate, or why major MLS sides shouldn't participate in the Open Cup?
There is none. Okay, no, I heard you correctly the first time. No, this is dumb as shit. It's all stupid. People got mad at me because I made a joke.
Mad at you?
I mean, yeah, it was shocking.
The most affable guy in the world?
That I just was like, oh yeah, if the twos get a home game against a higher division club, we're going to fucking cheer for them.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it's going to be
that
awesome.
That was so funny. People were up in your comments.
What
that
the fuck? Shut the fuck up. Oh my god, like every
fucking... Yeah,
here's fucking...
what you need to know is leave me alone.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not going to fucking... Not every joke that a podcast named Blue Balls is going to do is going to have the subtext spelled out in every fucking tweet we have. Like, God forbid we record 10 years of a podcast for someone to listen to if they want our context and subtleties of our thinking. But if you know anything about us and aren't just reacting to one fucking tweet where you're getting mad at something we didn't say, you would be more than well aware of where Jake... You could just assume how Jake and I would feel about this, and you'd be right. This sucks. It's stupid. Fuck the league. Fuck all this dumb bullshit. It's so stupid. Like, this whole idea... The two main arguments that MLS makes when it came to trying to pull out of this fucking cup, and I at least love, if you want to get a silver lining on this cloud, is at least MLS was forced to do this. They didn't want to do it at all. They didn't want to be in the U.S. Open Cup at all. At least they're being at least somewhat forced to do it. They didn't have as much leverage as they thought. They did have leverage because obviously not every team is going to be in the cup, but at least they got their ass shown when it came to what they really wanted. But their two main arguments were, oh, the cup has not been adequately marketed or presented in recent years, which, okay, was the duty of MLS and SUM for the last 15 years. It was their job to market the tournament, so thanks for doing a shitty job, self-admittedly. And second is them saying, oh, schedule congestion. When they cut out a whole fucking month and a half of the schedule to play the dumb fucking League's Cup, which is brand new and no one cares about and has no history, as opposed to the U.S. Open Cup, which is 100 years old. And, go ahead and make the first playoff round a best of three? Who gives a shit? Three games? We saw how stupid it was last year, and it's going to be just as dumb this year. It's a shit show. It's like MLS is certainly not covering themselves in glory with this, with the referee strike, which we also hasn't talked about, which is another thing you can assume our positions on. And I mean, even more laughably, The Athletic just an hour ago posted that MLS handed out a memo to every broadcast team, including radio broadcasters covering the matches, that they shouldn't be too hard on the fucking scabs in their commentary. What a fucking joke.
That's wild. What a trip. What a true trip.
Well, of course they would do that, though. It's unsurprising. The scabs are theirs.
No, absolutely. It's but just leverage. The sort of vertical integration, the notice, it's all just so silly. It's ridiculous. It's silly. So, okay, let's pivot to that. Okay, the Open Cup thing is heinous. It's ridiculous.
We're going to cheer for our boys anyway.
Of course, absolutely. And it's fun, and it will be fun, in fact. This isn't a vote on its behalf, but it will be fun to see how far NYCFC2 can take themselves in a broader competition. Great, that's good, but that's not the point of the cup. The point of the cup is much more rooted in tradition and history. When is the strike going to end, and what is impeding it from ending? I mean, it's obviously managerial intransigence. And we know that pro is not something that, like, we have all always, like, fallen on the side of, right? Like, the refereeing in this league is variable at best. But can you unpack a little bit for, you know, casuals, what it is that's happening with the refs in this league right now?
Well, pro is not the union, just to be clear. PRO, Professional Referees Organization, is the front-facing side of of, you know, they are as a group contracted to make sure every game is officiated, but the referees themselves are part of a union that Pro uses to officiate their games. And the referees group had their union had their offers now twice struck down by both Pro and MLS. Pro is on the side of MLS because they have an obligation to MLS to have every game refereed. And they have zero obligation to making sure referees are paid well. So, you know, this is not the first strike, but neither, you know, we've seen in even our short time of having this podcast, you know, players lock out, and we've seen, now we've seen the referees locked out, I think multiple times. So it's not new. It is not the most positive experience right now because there's a standstill where MLS is currently happy with how the refs are doing this year, the scabs, I should say. They are willing to stand beside them as long as they need to fucking extrude every fucking penny out of this league, out of these referees. And it's gross, but that's what they stand by. But then you get the most embarrassing things happening. They say they're happy, but Miami tied LA Galaxy almost directly because of a phantom call that was not checked by VAR. You have multiple games where VAR was used in very weird and, frankly, unintended ways. You had the referee of the Miami game against Orlando was removed 2 hours before the match because MLS referee stats on Twitter account that keeps track of all the referee stats, found this scab ref's public profile on a social media site that had him in a messy Inter Miami jersey. Probably not what you want to be posting publicly if you're going to referee that match. Because, yeah, referees suck and we hate them. But at the same time, the referees that are part of the union are not biased. They're not. They are professionals, and they have a strict set of guidelines and competitive outlines that they have to ascribe to. And these scabs, we have no idea. They come from all different sorts of leagues and all different sorts of experience. You got a bunch of retired guys. You got a bunch of, you know, semi-professional refs. It's hard to keep accountable. And that's the biggest thing, is that you can't keep individual refs accountable that are not part of a union, because the union's much easier, where you can, if you have to scold one ref, that reverberates to the rest of the referees. So it only benefits the league to have unionized refs in that sense. But they don't feel like paying them. And there's this stupid assumption with these owners of any professional sports team that they absolutely have to make money no matter what, hand over fist, and that they're entitled to even more money when it comes to public funding of their stadiums and tax breaks that they should get. And it's disgusting. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I'm happy there's certainly some leeway that we're getting in our stadium deal, but at least we're not taking taxpayer money directly in the construction of it, because, you know, you and I would be pitchforks in hand if that was the case. And I think this same mentality, you know, for the owners of this league to not be willing to open up the salary cap even a fucking inch, but are willing to steal pennies from these referees that aren't even paid a full-time wage anyway, it's gross, and I hate it. And it speaks to a lot of people when they try to argue on behalf of, well, the referee sucked anyway, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, so you are just on the side of these fucking multi-billionaires who are trying charge you hundreds of dollars for tickets and hundreds of dollars for jerseys, and at the same time exploit your loyalty to the sport, where the referees have nothing to do with how much you spend or pay or devote yourself to the sport, and are only asking to make somewhat of a living wage in a time when people aren't.
No, absolutely. I think that that's among the more ridiculous.
I'm sorry.
Takes
I was
is
talking...
then to conflate like refereeing with the referees union and with that strike action.
That I was talking so much and you just you have a play literally called Three Scenes in the Life of a Trotskyist out now. Go see it.
No free plugs.
We should
no
be hearing
plugs.
From you.
No, we're a pro-labor podcast. That's all it comes down to. Listen, and it's labor, and it's skilled labor. And even more importantly, if you are somebody who feels like oh, I resent the referees that we've had all of these years, and so, you know, by God, let's not give them one red cent, think at least about the accountability. Having organizations, having unionized labor, means that the labor that participates in that union is also accountable not only to the owners, who they have a complicated relationship with, but also to the union itself, to their fellow workers. There is a net gain for the product in organized labor, not only for the workers themselves, but also for the output, because the standard becomes agreed upon, right? Like in a peer-to-peer way. I'm not saying that, like, okay, they have to get organized, but my point is it's not going to get better with scab referees. It's not going to get better with referees who have no relationship to the union. Because where's the non-management accountability? It's not going to happen.
And if you're... Don't be mistaken. This MLS ref strike and the MLS attempting to back out of US Open Cup are directly related. They are both underlined by the greed of the owners of this league. And don't be mistaken, that is, these things are directly related to each other.
Trey, I want to talk about one more thing before we're done with talking points.
Ooh, okay.
It's not a big thing, but the paper of repute, Hudson River Blue, perhaps the longest running, easily the longest running, consistent coverage of New York soccer and NYCFC specifically, has moved to a new model. A sort of subscription/supporter-based model, ad-free model. I would say that the site, significantly cleaner. It sounds like the response has been largely positive. I think a lot of people rely on Hudson River Blue for concise, sharp, not always perfectly copy-edited coverage of NYCFC. What do you think about this shift in the economic model considering that these guys are part of the fan media ecosystem that we occupy?
I think they're extremely important. I think, obviously, like, you know, you've come cross paths with many of them over your times. One might, and every time I have, it's always been great. I think that, as we've seen from other... it's just this independent coverage is so important. And if you can only go as far as like the New York Times, how they have, if you're a regional reader, like the soccer team, NYCFC does not get recommended to you when it comes to local sports. If you're reading the New York Times, mm-hmm. even though The Athletic, you could make NYCFC your favorite team. And it's one of mine on my Athletic subscription because I do subscribe. That you would expect them to, you know, promote that to you, but they don't, because people still don't respect soccer in this league, you know, on a national scale. And so you are left to hold up the fucking ceilings of the fandom and information highway of this league through local independent sites. They are the fucking bones of the fandom of this league in this country. So I think... If Hudson River Blue has to go to this model, and it sounds like they've run the numbers and they have to do it, then you should subscribe. So I know I will. I need to. I haven't yet, to be honest, but I need to.
I didn't want to put you on the spot. Get a commitment.
No, you know, it's different, right? So like I write for The Outfield, and The Outfield is both. It's pay what you want. Like you could be subscribed for free, and you fucking should if you're listening to this. But I think it's a different thing where, you know, with the outfield, we're allowed the freedom to kind of make the site whatever we want because we're not beholden in that certain way. But at the same time, people do pay, and so there's an expectation of quality. But with Hudson River Blue, they have to get articles out almost every day. And in order to do that, they need a steady stream of income. And so I'm all for it. If that's what they need to do, you know, you got to pay. I'm okay with it if that's what they need to survive. And hopefully in the future, some national media conglomerate will buy up all of these, you know, much like the SB Nation that used to own them and own almost every independent MLS site. Hopefully someone in the future, God knows what the media landscape will be in the future. I certainly can't predict that, but hopefully they won't have to do this anymore. But for the time being, that's what we're with. And so all power to them. Speaking of guilds or unions, you know, I'm not part of a union, but I am in a informal guild of North American soccer reporters, of which I'm very proud to be a part of. And now, very recently, I think three people from Hudson River Blue have joined North American soccer reporters. So I have to stand behind them as part of the brotherhood.
Hell yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, shit.
Hell yeah.
You know what I realized? I forgot to tell you this. I'm now one of the three pool reporters for NYCFC.
Oh,
which
fuck.
Means I get to chat with the referees after games if so inclined.
Oh my god. Look at you. Oh my god. That's pretty fun. That's pretty great. When did that happen? And how did that happen?
It happened last week, and it probably happened because I'm a committee member of North American Soccer Reporters, so when they were picking names out of a hat, they're like, we should probably put that guy on there. and also the lead pool reporter is Scott Churchson, who we love, friend of the pod. And also, I believe it came to my mind because one of the Hudson River Blue reporters is also a pool reporter. So we're going to defer to Scott as to whether or not he wants to approach the refs after a game, and then we go from there.
Makes sense to me.
But
hopefully
my first experience
will be union.
My first experience, of course, with pool reporters was when the old pool reporter for NYCFC was one of the big national guys. I want to say it was Avez Galarsep, I think. Or it was someone else. It might have been someone else. That was the Alan Kelly game in 2018. When was that game? It still haunts my sleep. But the Phantom Throw-In game. And that's when we got the pool report back from the pool reporter, and me and all the other reporters and Sean Johnson were all studying the answers that they gave because it can be super important. So I'm very humbled and I will use it when necessary, the ability to get some answers from referees.
Understandably so. Trey, we're coming home.
It's coming home.
Big gulp. Big gulp in the mic on that one.
I'm sorry.
This Saturday, NYCFC returns to its home stadium, to the Burrows, to us, to take on who? The Portland Timbers, of course. What a home opener. Really, it seems like they're setting us up for a challenge, right? Why make it easy for the boys in blue? Portland with a 4-1 victory in their opener against Colorado, and more recently a 2-2 against DC United. Where are Portland this year? And do you think do we stand a chance?
Well, I don't know. It depends on who you ask.
Who is there to ask?
I think we do because we're at home. As you said, it's not the easiest task. For the reasons you said, Portland's interesting because they don't have all their DP spots filled. I should be more aware, but as far as I know, they have some injuries, and also they're still negotiating for a DP number 9. It looks like that might actually be finished up pretty soon, but they don't have one as of now. But they're in an interesting place where, much like us, you know, a team with lots of success in their history, pretty stable team in terms of being a top level team in this league. We've seen them. We know them very well, of course, intimately so.
We know them biblically even.
Yeah. We've shared sheets. but they had a down year, fired their coach, Gio Savarese, and they are, unlike us, and they are in this kind of rebuild mode like us, where they've patched a lot of holes in their roster. They had to say goodbye to a lot of their veterans and other players that have been there for a while, but they still have, I would say, one of the more talented teams top to bottom in terms of quality of depth. They just don't have those top-level players yet, but a little scary to see what Phil Neville has done with them. Obviously, you can make as many jokes as you want about Phil Neville, who has had not the most wildly successful career in MLS, but he's got those guys playing for each other. They've certainly outplayed their expectation in the last two matches. You know, DC has come out guns a-blazing, and I'm actually now newly terrified of DC. But they have outperformed their expected goals. I mean, I think their first game was like the most goals to expected goal differential without a penalty in a very long time. Like four goals on less than one expected goal. So they're fucking getting water from a rock.
Sure.
So that's kind of the team we're facing. It's like a team, Phil Neville has them, you know, focused. And even though they're scrappy and not 100% clean and together and the chemistry's not there, but they're playing for each other and they're not making mistakes. And so that's not necessarily the team you want to face, but their top end talent isn't there, as I said. And unfortunately, like, their midfield's super solid, and Eric Williamson, who's like James Sands on crack, is back for the first time in almost 2 years, and he looks great. So their midfield's going to be pretty tough to break down, but we're on a small field again, baby, and hopefully we can learn from the last two matches and start to diversify our build-up and control the tempo and have a little more quality on the ball. That's one thing we didn't mention, is just like this team's taking way too fucking long to either pass the ball or shoot the ball. There is no one touch passes or one touch shots.
Mm-hmm.
And there needs to be. I mean, it's fucking dismal how long we spend on the ball without moving it. Gotta fix that.
So is that going to be the key to the game? I mean, just like getting comfortable at home and then moving the ball faster?
Yep, that's what I think. I think dictating the tempo from minute one and then building from that in terms of controlling the game through passing quickly and with intent is the key.
Do you think they'll do it?
Yeah, we're going to win 3-0. I'll say that, whatever, fuck it, 3-0.
Great, good, yeah.
I don't believe it.
What could it possibly hurt? I could see a 2-1. I could see a 2-1 out there. It wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world. But I'm gonna guess, listen, same as before. For me, if we get a fucking goal, I will count myself lucky.
Yep.
I will say, great, I'm so grateful to no longer be scoreless in the season.
James Sands is out.
Do you think it'll happen? Yes, I think it can happen. Hmm? Oh, say what? Say again.
James Sands is out. What are we going to do? A Perea as a six, or Justin Hack in the game, or?
Do you think we'll see Justin Hack? That feels, with all the new toys that we have, it feels unlikely to see Justin Hack as a starter.
Yeah, I agree.
But then again, it's pretty early. I guess Perea as a six is a quicker, it's an easier thing to imagine. But at the same time, I'm like, I think it'll be a rather than trying to pretend that he's not there, like a reordering that I'm not anticipating right now because I'm not smart enough to. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's gonna be like just a shuffling of the midfield again. I think maybe even Keaton Parks has a six or a double pivot is probably most likely because we saw the double pivot.
Have we seen that happen before?
The double pivot?
No, the Keaton Parks is the six.
Not singular, no. Only as a double. So I could see that happening. What I would love if Tavon Gray's healthy, play him as a six. Why not? Let's get freaky.
Let's get freaky, folks. It's going to hit a home run. Get a win. It's going to happen. Trey, where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore. What about you?
At Jake Beckhard. We both tweet at Blue Balls, Blue Balls Pod. That's who we are. That's what we do. We love it, folks. We love it, and we love you listening to it. If you want to grab some merch, there's been an uptick in merch purchases, my friend, and we appreciate your support of this podcast. You can jump on over to linktr.ee/blueballsnycfc. That'll take you to the Spreadshirt. Blueballs.spreadshirt.com. That's where you can get to the shop. But mostly, if you just want to drop a dollar in the tip jar, we'll take it. Put that dollar in the tip jar, and we will see you at the match this weekend. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Dinner time.